From KCUR, I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date. From weird beers to your typical TV dinner, all the processed food we eat has been carefully crafted to taste and smell as appealing as possible. This hour, we look at how flavors are modified and enhanced to make that morning muffin you enjoy taste so much like fresh blueberries, even though it doesn't have any real berries. We'll discuss some of the secrets behind food flavoring. And later, we chat with a local foodie who has founded an exclusive underground supper club. Plus, the latest local listen on Up to Date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Well, here's a shocker. So much of the processed food we eat these days has been crafted to taste that way. The idea to make that food taste and smell just as delectable as it can be, it's a multi-billion dollar industry in this country. Today, a look at how the food industry molds flavors so that consumers want to return to that product time and time again, and the secrets behind the science of making food taste great. And later, the test kitchen, or a culinary playground for up-and-coming chefs, also known as a secret dining society in Kansas City. But first, flavoring food. With us is Neil Witte. He's the training and technical support manager for the Boulevard Brewing Company. Neil, nice to have you. Welcome over.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here.
Michael Feingold's on the phone with us this morning. He's the lab manager and food technologist for Cereal Ingredients up in Leavenworth. Michael, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, Mike, tell us what you guys make. What happens up at Cereal Ingredients in Leavenworth, Kansas?
Well, we make flavored inclusions and bits for different types of baked goods. Like, let's say you need a blueberry bagel, but you can't use a blueberry. So we'll make like an artificial blueberry that meets your needs.
And you call those flavored inclusions?
Yeah, that's kind of what the industry calls it. I think on our website they're called flavor bites. It's a little nugget of, just pure flavor.
Okay, you're talking to a guy who's never baked a thing in his life. Why can't you just use blueberries in your muffin instead of flavored inclusions?
And, we get that question a lot. Blueberries, they're not very stable. The color can bleed, or they might not be the freshest blueberry. You might use a frozen blueberry, so you don't always get the same consistency. With a product like ours, in the industry-wide, you'll get the same exact product every time. If you need a specific color, we can develop a color to meet that. If you need a specific blueberry intensity or a blueberry flavor, we can do that as well.
God, that's just amazing. So, but beyond blueberries then, Michael, what kinds of things do you guys make up there?
We can make anything, pretty much to your heart's content. We can make jalapeno flavored bits that might want to go in like a cornbread where you can't use a jalapeno, or artificial bacon bits. A lot of the products are made with soy. We can make artificial bacon bits are made of soy. We can make it with flour or something else. Just pretty much any flavor you could possibly think of, we can make an inclusion or a flavor bite that meets our customers' needs.
Well, I guess some folks out there might be wondering, Michael, are these flavored inclusions, are these things good for you or not?
Well, I'm not a doctor, so I really can't
sure.
say whether or not they're good for you. But we do make a lot of most of our flavor inclusions are made from natural ingredients. They're a sugar base or a flour base, and they're designed to go into the mixture so that it kind of, you can spot it out, but it's not going to be a huge like standout, weird texture. So we do use a lot of natural ingredients when we formulate. You're not eating poison.
Well, Michael, let me just stay with you for a moment here because, you always see and hear, on food packages, you see and read made with natural ingredients or, made with artificial ingredients on food labels. What differentiates a natural ingredient from an artificial one?
Well, the FDA has you can go on the website, the FDA website, and they'll tell you what the difference is. But in layman's terms, a natural, flavor is derived from that actual substance. So if you need a beef flavor, you know, if it's natural, it's somehow going to be related to, you know, whether it's flavored with beef meat or beef bone. And if it's artificial, you know, it's basically the breakdown, the molecular chemicals that make up that flavor. You know, so scientists go in the lab and they remake the beef flavored chemical.
I mean, this is just amazing to me what you're saying. I mean, this notion that so much of what we eat is sort of manufactured as opposed to natural, it's pretty incredible, Michael.
Right. And, you know, just because, you know, chemically the flavor, the natural flavor and the artificial flavor are chemically, you know, pretty much identical. So, I mean, it's just a matter of whether or not it was derived from a natural source, whereas like a cow or shrimp or, you know, whatever flavor you're going, whereas the scientists, you know, basically went to the lab and recreated that aroma compound.
That's just amazing. Well, Neil, this turned to Boulevard Brewing Company here. You know, is commercially produced beer one of the last foods that uses ingredients in their whole and natural state, or don't break my heart here. Is there still some good news there with the Boulevard Brewing Company?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of great news with Boulevard Brewing Company. You know,
always is.
You know, we're no strangers to using different flavorings in our beer. We tend to use more traditional or natural ingredients or whole foods in our beer as much as we can.
Things so. Like what?
Well, for instance, like using real cocoa nibs in our chocolate ale. You know, we didn't use any artificial flavors or anything like that. We just used real cocoa nibs to steep in the tank.
Why did you do that? Why didn't you use artificial? Wouldn't it have been easier somehow to use artificial?
Well, you know, we like to make traditional beers and use traditional processes. And this was a collaboration with Christopher Elbow, who is a chocolateer in town,
a very well-known chocolateer.
And so he, I don't think he would be too keen on using artificial flavors since he uses real cocoa nibs himself. So, you know, being a collaboration, you know, he brought that element to the table. And of course we brought the beer element to the table.
Well, are there artificial ingredients in beer?
Sometimes there can be. Yeah. There are certain types of, ingredients that'll help settle out certain haze-forming proteins and things like that that are artificially derived. Not all of them are, but certainly there's certain things you can use in the process that are artificially derived.
Just from a 10,000-foot vantage point, Neil, how complicated is it to make beer?
Well,
you walk in the Boulevard, I've taken the tour, everyone has, you know, and there's lots of vats and timing stuff and steam, and you get a sense there's a little more to it than meets the eye.
Certainly, if you don't know much about beer the first time you walk in, there's a little sense of amazement as to how complex the process can be.
Mm-hmm.
But really, when you boil it down, it's not that complicated. We're making a sweet, sugary liquid from grain, and we add yeast, and the yeast eats those sugars and makes alcohol. So that's kind of in a nutshell what happens. So it's a relatively simple process, but on a production level like we're doing it, there's a lot of really small, important details that you have to pay attention to, and that's what makes the process so complicated.
Hmm. Michael, I'm wondering to what extent that cereal ingredients in Leavenworth has to worry about labeling requirements, or is that something you let your customers worry about?
Yeah, it's something we really let our customers worry about since our product is really an ingredient in a much larger product, you know, like a piece of bread or a bagel. A lot of times our customers will dictate to us, hey, we need this to be only use natural product, you know, or hey, if you're flavoring this blueberry, we want you to use, you know, actually blueberry powder in this as well. So it's not something we really worry about too much.
So it's the responsibility of the folks who actually put the food on the counters in stores that have to worry about that stuff.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Let me get our listeners involved here with their questions about the food they eat and the products that go into that food. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here on UpToDate. Again, 816-235-2888. You can also email us at UpToDate@KCUR.org or tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. Mike, do you have any idea how many flavoring agents you guys have up there at Cereal Ingredients?
Well, in our lab, we probably have maybe 100 or 200 different flavors because they're mostly experimental. You know, that could be a 40 or 50 different orange flavors or, you know, like I keep coming back to blueberry because that's a very popular product we do. But I think on our shelf, we have about 30 different blueberry flavors.
Oh, that's amazing. And do you guys, maybe you said this before and I missed it, but do you guys actually create those tastes and aromas yourself or do those come from outside your company?
Yeah, those generally come from outside the company. There's flavor houses all over the U.S., and you basically tell them, hey, I need a orange flavor, and they'll ask you, well, what type of orange do you want? On a Caracara orange or a blood orange flavor, and they can literally tailor their chemist to develop the flavor, exact orange that you need.
Well, how do you guys know exactly what you need in some cases?
Well, you know, a lot of it just comes down to what the application is, you know. And a lot of it comes down to you make a couple with an apple flavor, and, you know, green apple tastes different than, like, a Red Delicious. And you send it out to – you make a couple prototypes, and you send it out to the customer, and they, you know, then they choose. They say, all right, this is the apple we're going for. So you might send them a dozen different apple-flavored, you know, bits, and they choose one out of the dozen.
Hmm. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888. Well, we were good enough here. You were good enough up at your company in Leavenworth there to give us a tour of the lab. To up-to-date staffers, Danny Alexander and Beth Lipoff the other day. I hear some sniffing and tasting were involved. We recorded the tour, so let's take a listen to just a few minutes of it here.
My name is Michael Feingold with Cereal Ingredients, and I'm the lab manager and food technologist here. Some of the exotic flavors would be natural artificial pepperoni flavor. Natural, so it has to come from a natural source with artificial as well. So I'll let you smell it if you want, and you can tell me if that smells like pepperoni.
If you had just stuck it under my nose without telling me what it was, I'm not sure.
Most of the time, flavors, the natural and artificial flavors, can get pretty close. I mean, there's literally a flavor for everything. Fruits are very popular because fruits are expensive, and fruits are hard to control. You know, the water activity of fruits, moisture level of fruits, color bleeding is an issue. So fruits are very popular for natural and artificial flavor. Let me grab this one right here. And as you see, you know, there's 30 different flavors of strawberry right there, and they're all going to smell a little bit different. I formulated a product with strawberry, and it's too strong. So I might want to dial down a little bit, or maybe they want a more acidic-tasting strawberry, and I can't add acid to the product. I mean, just smell that one. That one is completely different than the one you smelled before. Now, this one is natural and artificial, and it has a little bit of chemical smell to it, as opposed to the natural smells just like it. A little bit more punch, or it's formulated different. There's different chemicals in there to enhance something on your tongue or the way it smells. I can let you smell that as well. Like, this would probably be a wild cherry flavor. I mean, it's got a lot of punch to it.
Wow.
And it's very, very artificial. This smells nothing like, you know, cherry. Be really careful on that. This is a natural one. This is a cinnamon flavor. And cinnamon is a great...
Wow.
It's really easy to extract it, and it can only put so much cinnamon in a product before it gets gunky, or you're mixing a lot of it in the plant, it's going to particulate, so you don't want to fill your whole room with powdered cinnamon. That's where you might want to use something like this in a liquid form that's going to enhance.
Let's just say I wanted a Jelly Belly that tasted like a spaghetti dinner.
Absolutely. There is something for spaghetti dinner. Now, you might have to put a couple flavors together. There might not be a spaghetti dinner flavor, but you might have, here's some cheese. This one, this might hit your spaghetti dinner. Yeah, that one is a Parmesan cheese flavor. If you put some tomato powder or dehydrated tomatoes, you're going to hit the nail on the head. Pretty much flavors can do that. Of course, you can't put too many flavors together because it'll muddle the palate. But, you know, different flavors, adding salt or acids, can enhance flavors and, you know, round everything out.
I'm Bob Hatch, and I'm CEO. I'm going to show you a sample right now that's going to demonstrate one of these products to you on the flavor. I want you guys to try this. Guess what that flavor is?
Cinnamon and brown sugar.
Okay, so now you want to go beyond that standard cinnamon. So let's try one of these.
Oh, much smoother. It doesn't hit you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a little, almost like a salt component to it.
Imagine the degree of blending and the amount of time it would take to put these two together. But what you have in there, you have a combination of the flavor for sour cream mixed in with the flavor for cinnamon. So we have to figure out what does the customer think he really needs. And sometimes we can even solve a problem for him a different way. it. But let's try this one. That also shows how small we can grind it.
It's even smaller than the candy sugar I put in my Christmas cookies. Okay, I'm going in.
Okay.
I'm not getting anything from it.
And that's exactly the point. Sometimes he would like to have the visual, but he doesn't want another competing flavor with the flavors he already has. But he wants to suggest a certain flavor. So in that case, we'll do a product for him that's only color and has no flavor.
In your experience, have you ever had a request for a flavor you weren't able to?
No. There's a flavor for everything. I mean, there is a flavor for everything. Last year, the company I was working for previously, we featured a pizza granola that had truffle flavor in it. So literally, there's a flavor for everything.
That's Danny Alexander and Beth Lipoff touring cereal ingredients up in Leavenworth. And Michael, I got to tell you, I knew a lot of this stuff was going on, but there's part of me that doesn't want to know about it. Is that reaction unusual or not?
It is, especially the whole trending, all these crazy diet, the paleo diet, I shouldn't say that crazy, but the paleo diet, the real push, the farm to market.
Yeah, right.
It's two totally different worlds. There's a world where these products need to sit on a shelf for a long time. And then, there's the restaurant world. So, somewhere there needs to be a happy medium. These two worlds are kind of at war right now, but there's more money in the, industrial production of food.
I'm getting that impression pretty clearly here. Well, you have been kind enough to send back some sample products from Cereal Ingredients, and they're sitting in three plastic cups before myself and Neil Witte here. There's a looks like a kind of a black grape-looking color kibble in a cup, and there's a red one, and there's a brown one. Neil, why don't you, if you don't mind, sample the grape-colored one, the darker one, first. You try that, and I'm going to do the same thing, because one of us has to be able to talk while we're doing this. And you tell me what you're coming up with there.
Well, to me, this tastes like that kind of blueberry taste you get in the blueberry muffin mix you get from the grocery store.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. That's exactly what I'm thinking here. Michael, are we right about that?
That is a blueberry. You are correct.
This is the blueberry. Okay. You're going to have to wash your drink it down a little bit, Neil. Then we'll try the red kibble in the middle cup here. This will be, I'm sure, a very different deal here. Yeah, so grab it there. And I'm going to do the same thing here, and you tell me what you got. I think I'm getting some blueberry mingling with my red here. So
yeah, some type of berry again. I'm like a strawberry or maybe I'm thinking now raspberry.
It's not real strong, is it?
Mm-mm.
Strawberry maybe, yeah. I get that. Michael, what is it?
It's a strawberry, and there's not a lot of flavor in there. Going back to what Bob was saying earlier, the color is, trying to trick your mind into thinking it's a strawberry.
Yeah.
But it's an artificial strawberry is what it's flavored with.
Artificial strawberry. And again, what makes up that artificial strawberry? What ingredients are in what I'm tasting here?
I'm not 100% entirely sure. I'm not a flavor chemist.
Yeah.
They're kind of like sommeliers of this industry. So, it takes a lot of skill to do that, and I'm just not there yet.
Yeah, sure. Neil, take the brown one, the little pellets there. I'll do the same thing here, and let's see what we got this time. It takes a second, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what it is.
It's real subtle, and after those berries, it's...
Mm-hmm. It's real subtle.
It's kind of...
A little cinnamony, maybe, a little bit?
Yeah. Cinnamony, kind of brown sugar.
Yeah. Yeah. Michael, help us out. What's the light brown one?
It's a cinnamon crunch, and we use a different type of cinnamon, and, there's 100 different types of cinnamon, and, we choose which cinnamon to use based on what the product application is. So it's just a little hint of cinnamon.
Yeah. Okay. When you're out somewhere, Michael, eating, a packaged product, can you tell if it's been flavored with artificial ingredients or not?
Absolutely. It's the FDA mandates you have to, claim on your package whether or not it is. So on the backside, it'll say, natural or artificial flavors. right on the back side.
Yeah, but I'm wondering if you don't have the advantage of seeing the package, you as someone who works in the industry, can you tell just by sample tasting something whether there's artificial ingredients in there or not?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was a chef before I was a food scientist, so just the flavors kind of stand out. So absolutely, especially blueberry. I can tell blueberry right away.
Huh. Let's go to some phone calls here, 816-235-2888. James from Kansas City, Missouri, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
I have a question. I've always been fascinated by natural and artificial ingredients, and I just have to ask, what is done when it comes to those things that are less than pleasant that provide those flavors, like castoreum would be the prime example in my head. It is a... And I'm not sure what the level of vulgarity is, but it is it's a flavor derived from the anal gland of a beaver.
My
in
goodness.
Canada.
Now, who discovered, James, here's the big question. Who discovered that flavor?
My girlfriend discusses an image of a farm, of a guy out in the woods somewhere that did discover it. And the image is very hilarious. That somebody had to have found that out someday.
Yeah, I gather.
It's like raspberries. But the larger question is, and I've heard they've reduced the number of use over the years once it's been discovered that that's what raspberry flavoring is. But is it more of a veil, I would say, is my question. Is it a veil that the companies hide behind, or is it something that you embrace?
Michael Feingold, take that one.
I am really perplexed by the question, but I can't tell you.
Well, we can talk about that. Like red food coloring is beetles. There's a beetle that's ground up. That's where we get red from. So it's a long list of ingredients. So.
Okay.
Well, I can tell you this. We had a flavor chemist come in the same. They want an orange flavor. They'll take an orange, and they'll break it down, and they'll put it on a gas chromatograph and mass spectrometer. And it'll tell you every single flavor or aroma compound that's in that orange. And what the chemists do is they try and recreate, well, they do recreate those. And, you know, the premium flavors are going to have, you know, a combination of, you know, all of those flavors or all those aromas that make that orange smell. And your lower end or might only have one or two different notes that they pick from that orange. So I don't know if that really answered your question. As for anal glands of beavers, that's the first I've ever heard. I mean, I'm not saying it's not plausible. I just never heard of that before.
Well, give me a bag of that stuff, Neil or Michael. Send it down here to me. I could use that and have some fun with that sometime. Yeah. Let's move on to some questions about chocolate ale. You know, this time of year, Bolivar puts out its chocolate ale, Neil, and so many folks anticipate it. It's a collaboration, as you said, between the brewery and chocolatier Christopher Elbow. So tell us, how do you get the taste of chocolate into the ale? And again, is this a flavor created in a lab and added to the brew, or how do you do it?
Well, what we use is we use real cocoa nibs. They're actually from Belrona, which is in the Dominican Republic. That's where they've been sourced from. And we take those nibs and we put them in almost like pantyhose, and we suspend them in the fermenter. So after the beer is fermented and the alcohol has been created, we suspend the cocoa nibs in there and steep it in there, kind of like tea, almost like a chocolate toddy, if you will.
Huh.
And we leave it in there for a little bit and up to, you know, maybe a day or so with the cocoa nibs. Different flavorings we might leave in there for different periods of time. And it's just that, you know, just that day basically gives it that really intense chocolate aroma.
How much trial and error went into making this chocolate ale over the years?
Well, there's a lot of testing that goes on to develop a beer like this. There was, you know, Christopher coming by and the brewery quite a bit when working with Stephen Powell, our brewmaster, and coming up with the right chocolate to work with, coming up with the right base beer, doing what we call bench testing, where we might take some existing beers and just add different types of chocolate to the beer right there in the lab and test them out in different proportions and see how it works out. And then you come up with something that you think is going to work for a test batch, and then you brew a small test batch and see how it works out.
At Bolivar Brewing, then, so who determines that this is the taste we're going to go with? I mean, is there a vote? Is there a committee? Are there professional tasters who come in? Or who says that's the right taste, that's what we're going to go with?
Yeah, we've got several trained tasters at the brewery that will convene in a panel on a regular basis.
Are you one of them?
I am one of the trained tasters at the brewery, yeah. We get together every day, sometimes twice a day, to evaluate and kind of give a pass-fail of all the batches of beer that get released. And it's that same group of people.
Before the beer, even ordinary run-of-the-line, run-of-the-mill beer gets tested by you guys before it goes out.
Exactly, yeah. All the unfiltered wheat beer, pale ale, and all the beers we make, every batch of beer has to pass the panel before it gets released. And it's a group of those same folks, including brewers and our lab technicians and our brewmaster, who will get together and sample some of these test batches and some of these bench tests to see if that's the direction that we want to go.
You know, there's a lot of people listening to this who want that job.
Yeah, we have no lack of volunteers.
I was going to say, people lining up to do something like that. So when you create a new beer, how big a batch will be brewed in the early stages to make sure you have it right?
Typically about 30 to 35 barrels, and a barrel is 31 gallons. So we'll brew, 1,000, 1,100 gallons for a test batch.
Yeah. Mike, same question to you. What size batches do you work with up there when you're developing a new product for a client?
It varies. We can go from, 1 pound to 80 pounds. You know, if they're just doing a bench top sample, they just want to put something in cookies and test it, then we might send them a pound. But if they want to do a consumer trial, to see what consumers like best, we might send them 80 pounds or 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm. So you actually send samples to the client to get their feedback before you go ahead and go into full production here, right?
Yeah, we don't want to waste product. The dollar rules the world right now.
Yeah. I mean, other than truffle pizza-flavored granola bars, have you had any other odd flavor requests in your career?
We kind of follow the trends that are going on in the culinary world right now, and exotic fruits. And we had this request a couple of years ago for a baobab-flavored granola cluster at my previous place, and that's the weirdest fruit I've ever had in my life.
Baobab?
Baobab.
Never.
Yeah.
Oh, baobab. Okay, yeah. Never heard of it. Yeah.
It comes from Africa. It's sort of citrus.
And Neil, in the world of craft brewing, there are some pretty amazing flavors that you are familiar with, like hot chilies in your beer. Is that, you've heard of this?
Yeah, there are brewers who have done a number of different chili beers that provide any number of different levels of that kind of capsaicin heat that you get from the chili.
You guys don't do it?
No, we don't.
How about oyster beer? Really?
Yeah, oysters and stout are a really traditional beer and food pairing, and there's a lot of brewers who are trying to kind of bring those flavors into the beer itself and using either oysters or oyster shells in the brewing process to provide a little bit of that flavor.
Michael Feingold, just a final thing here. Where do people in your field, look for flavor inspirations? Where does that come from?
I think it kind of just follows the trend. Think of like the sriracha or these chicken and waffles, that started, kind of low, and then fine dining really took it in, and then it came to your more mainstream restaurants, and then now sriracha flavored Lay's potato chips, or so it kind of follows a pattern, fine dining, normative, mainstream, and then on your shelves in the grocery store.
Yeah, okay. Well, we're going to leave our conversation about food flavoring there. What an interesting world, and some of that was very, very new to me. I want to thank Michael Feingold, the lab manager and food technologist for Cereal Ingredients up in Leavenworth. Michael, I sure appreciate it. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
And Neil Witte from Boulevard Brewing Company, you guys are always welcome here. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
And good luck with the chocolate ale this season, too.
Thanks.
You brought some with you, right?
I did, as a
matter
of fact.
Pour a little bit before as we go off the air here, and I'll take a little sip in between segments here.
Don't mind if I do.
Our next segment, which is on the Test Kitchen, a whole different world in Kansas City dining where chefs get to create all kinds of crazy things for folks who are willing to pay $50 or $100 to sample it. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.